This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, we'll get a look at the work of the BBB and how it helps protect consumers from scams. But first, the Cincinnati Charter, adopted by voters in 1926, is the city's constitution. It governs every aspect of how Cincinnati is governed and how it operates. The 24-member Cincinnati Charter Review Task Force has been reviewing the charter over the past year. Joining us to provide an update are Task Force co-chairman Mike Morgan and Colin Groth, president of the Charter Committee of Greater Cincinnati, and city councilman and chair of the Task Force Elections Committee. Jeff Birding will be joining us in a few minutes. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Mike, start us off by telling us why the Charter Review Task Force was created and how it's gone about its work so far.
Well, Cincinnati revised its charter in 1924 and 26, and we haven't had a major holistic overview of it since that period of time. What we have done on several different occasions is to tweak it. And so in 1999, we made some major changes in the system, but rather than really looking at the charter as a whole, we made some modifications that had some unintended consequences to them. So we went to a quote unquote stronger mayor system in 1999. And what we have come up with, or what the result has been since then, are some problems in the system that really need to be addressed and should be addressed through a look at the entire core form of Cincinnati government.
Yeah, just to be clear cut, this is not about rewriting the charter at this point, is it?
Well, it's really about taking a look at the entire charter, looking at it as a whole, and determining what needs to be corrected in it. That starts with archaic language, that type of thing. But also asking the question of whether or not we have the best government for Cincinnati now and moving forward. And if we don't, then we need to do a process similar to what Cincinnati did in the 20s, which is reinvent our government.
And, you know, if I can just jump in from a national perspective, I mean, I have the opportunity in my professional role to consult and travel all over the country and work with cities and regions to think about, in my world, how they're improving educational outcomes for kids. But I think what I've seen, uniformly is that the cities and the regions that are dramatically rethinking the role of government, the structure of government, the form of government, they're the ones that are really achieving and reaching new heights. I had dinner with the mayor of Salt Lake County, Ben McAdams, in early January, and he's dramatically restructuring the county to focus on 8 core outcomes. And he's asking people from across departments to think about the connection of their individual role or their professional department to those countywide outcomes. I think what we're seeing across the country is that there's a shift in the way that we think about government. And this charter reform process is an opportunity for us in the greater Cincinnati region to talk about what's the form and function that we hope city government takes over the next 90 years.
Colin, some of the work's been pretty clear cut. I mean, as Mike was talking about, there's some archaic language as you go through this line by line. There are a lot of things you discover that just don't apply anymore, do they?
No, I mean, I think, you know, there's always sort of the line that, you know, there's still language in there about general hospital, university hospital, things that exist from a period in time that many of us would not recognize that Cincinnati. And so I think there's some simple ministerial things that were necessary to begin the process. I mean, this is something that, you know, Charter was formed more than 90 years ago as a political organization to bring about this type of reform in local government. And the reality is that it's a much different world 90 years later, right? So the conversation has been, what is the right shape of government in our community? How do we best position ourselves to integrate, to interact with our regional partners? What's the right form of representation for our citizens with our elected officials? What are the ways that we can set ourselves up to best thrive over those next 90 years?
Mike, why should anyone care about this? What is the significance of doing all this detail work and going through this line by line?
Well, it's very important because when you look at other Ohio cities, for example, you know, you will see charters that have been given thought since 90 years ago, for the most part. Cleveland is kind of in the same boat. But it's important to go through it line by line, because where we have made an error here in Cincinnati in the past 10 to 15, 20 years, is to make little modifications to the charter. We need to stop tweaking it and messing around with it, and we need to rethink city government. The goal of this process is to get the whole thing right and to give this city the best government that it can possibly have. So those things, those changes that we made in the fall to get rid of some of the archaic language, that was just archaic language. What we're really looking at now is how much of what is in the charter is archaic from a substantive standpoint. When we adopted this charter in the 20s, you know, there were a lot of guiding principles behind it, and there were good principles and solid principles in the 20s, but it's not the 20s anymore. And a lot of those guiding principles followed a progressive era mentality that is the same progressive era mentality that produced a lot of positive changes in society. It also gave us prohibition because it was kind of the mindset at the time that you could fix anything that was wrong with society with enough bureaucracy. And that's where our current system of government comes from. And it doesn't mean that it's bad, but it means that it's probably a good thing to rethink some of those assumptions that were made about what makes for good or bad government in the 1920s.
So the original charter was you call it progressive. So it was reform minded, and it was set up to deal with corruption. Was that the original intent?
That was the original intent. And actually, most major cities in the state of Ohio adopted charters that were very similar to our charter in the 20s. But we are the city that is left with the one that looks most closely like it did in the 1920s.
Colin, what kind of challenges have you run into as you've been doing this? Have you hit any landmines or anything difficult, so to speak?
Well, I think one of the things that you've already asked about is one of the most difficult things. You know, why for the everyday citizen, why should this matter? Why do I care about this document?
So convincing people this is important. Okay?
Convincing people that this is important, finding that connection, right? So when we talk about election systems, right? People sometimes will glaze over. But if we say, hey, you know, do you feel represented at City Hall? What would it look like for you to feel that you have a voice? What's the right way that we should be? How often should we be electing our officials, right? Mike mentioned some of the changes to the mayoral form of government. We've also changed the way that we actually hold council elections. So every 4 years now, this is a rather quiet time in local Cincinnati politics for the first time in a long time, because we don't have a every 2 year council election now. So, we're looking at school board elections in the fall. But for the most part, it's a pretty quiet time. And so it's often easy for citizens and others to think, well, there's no, you know, dramatic issue du jour, or there's no major election in front of me. Why should I care about this sort of legal governing document? And I think connecting it to how citizens' voices are represented, connecting it to the powers that are exhibited in a mayor, making connections to benchmark or peer cities, beginning to make things that connect it to voters and interested citizens is, I think, an important thing for this process.
Mike?
And I think that the way that people relate to that most directly is election systems. You know, we made a change in the 20s to go to a 9X system, meaning that we elect our council members in Cincinnati at large citywide. And at the time that we did that, again, it was a very progressive idea. At that period of time, we had 36 council members in Cincinnati. And I don't think that any of us want to return to that. But the question is whether or not that entirely at-large system is still properly representing the citizens. And there are some things that have been studied that really make us question whether or not that system is still the best system to represent neighborhoods all across the city. When you look at the statistics over the past 30 years, you find that over 60% of council members have come from four different neighborhoods in this city. Now, we're a city of 52 different neighborhoods. So are those people that never have a council person represent them, are they getting their tax dollars worth from this system, from this 9X system? Or is there a better way to do it? And I think that's probably the most direct question that we have to answer in terms of representation. And it's probably the thing that is most important to the day-to-day lives of Cincinnatians and business owners and people who work and pay taxes here.
Mike, can you give me an example? Do you think that the current council would look a lot different if we had voting by district in the last election?
I'm not really sure that the composition of it would be radically different. But what would be different is that, number one, wherever you live in this city, you would know that you had at least one council person that was accountable to your neighborhood. And I think that that is a fundamental difference in how citizens interact with their government. The other major difference would be that it's a much lower threshold to enter the process. We are seeing on a national level money take over politics. And Cincinnati is not outside of that system. You know, we're not immune from that influence. So back in 2001, people were very concerned about the money that was entering the process. And so there was a movement to go to a partially district system in the early 2000s. At that period of time, the concern was that city council members were having to raise roughly $170,000 apiece just to be viable candidates for council. Today, that number has increased to about $250,000 apiece. Now, that is to become a city council member that makes $60,000 a year. So those amounts of money are really start to become astronomical amounts of money. Whereas if you go to a district system, there's going to be a natural check on that. Your neighbor who is a good citizen, those people that really care in community council meetings, those people are going to have the ability to run for office in the city based on their reputation and their knowledge and what they know, rather than their ability to raise serious sums of money.
And I think building on what Mike's talking about, unfortunately, this shows up in voter turnout, right? So we've seen, you know, you talk about the last mayoral election, a turnout of less than 30% of registered voters. Unfortunately, this national malaise, this growing power and influence of money in politics, I think we're starting to see it show up in the way that citizens turn out to vote in elections that are critically important. We're thinking about the school board election this fall, right? You're likely electing a group that's going to choose the next superintendent of Cincinnati Public Schools. I'm very concerned that turnout will be incredibly low, right? And so as voters are less engaged, as they're more turned off by the process, I think it shows up in the quality of individuals that desire to run for office and the ability of citizens to access City Hall and other institutional bodies and the desire of voters to show up and vote in polls.
We will continue our conversation about Cincinnati's charter, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Cincinnati Charter Review Task Force has been busy during the past year reviewing the city's governing document and recommending changes. My guests this afternoon are Mike Morgan and Colin Groth, and you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Colin, do people get confused when they hear about the city charter and the charter committee? Do you have to explain that these things are not quite the same?
And now add in charter schools, right? So we've cluttered the charter vernacular, I guess, in the last 91 years or so. But there is some confusion. I mean, charter at its root is a political movement, and it was a political movement that was founded to bring about reform in city government and in the 20s, and now is, I think, being renewed again as we've brought on 14 new board members over the last year and a half, as we've, I think, significantly reduced our average age. And as I think we're looking at a new way of viewing city government. I think for many years, charter has been viewed as a group that has been about a particular type of government as opposed to a group that's advocating consistently and vocally for good government. And we view that as an expression in our seven principles: transparency, accountability, independence, fiscal responsibility, regional cooperation, equity, and continuous improvement. And so this charter reform process is an opportunity to express those values and principles through this citizen-led task force.
Mike, we were talking about how city council members are elected earlier, and we were talking about districts. Drawing districts sounds like it could be a fair way to represent the various neighborhoods of Cincinnati, make council members more accountable to the voters. But are there challenges to drawing up districts? Because in my mind, I think of the word redistricting on a larger scale, and I think political nightmare. I mean, are you opening your door to that kind of thing?
I think political nightmare is that's the right terminology. and that's been one of the biggest hurdles to anything that would use a district type system. And so, you know, and to be clear, I mean, my role with this task force is to try to be an honest broker of all of the questions that we're asking. And my role is not to advocate for any particular type of system. But, you know, I'm saying the things that I'm saying about districts because this comes out of the findings of the election committee. And a majority of that committee has recommended that we go away from a purely at-large system. But they've not made a recommendation for exactly what that means or what it looks like. And that's in part because they recognize that how these districts would be drawn, if that's the system that we go to. And we could go to a system that's entirely districts, or we could go to one that's a combination of districts and at-large seats. And, but if we go to either one of those, how those districts get drawn is going to be the determining factor of whether or not people think that that system is going to be representative. It's going to determine whether or not it passes. And so the citizens are going to need to be directly involved in that process of determining what constitutes a fair district and how you would redraw those districts in the future. Because what we do not want to do is set up municipally the type of gerrymandering that has ruined America on a state and federal level.
Now, you mentioned that there were four neighborhoods that where most of the council members were coming from. What neighborhoods are those?
That is a really good question that I need to consult this report to say. Hyde Park is one of them.
Okay.
Avondale is one of them. Mount Lookout has been one of them. Westwood and Clifton. And when you say Clifton, that means Clifton and not Clifton Heights. And I'm aware of that because I lived in Clifton Heights for the past 15 years and can tell you that there was no real representation on council for Clifton Heights for that period of 15 years. But those are the neighborhoods. So, you know, if you're coming out of those neighborhoods, and right now that's changed a little bit since that research was done. You know, we currently have several council members who live downtown and over the Rhine. So downtown and over the Rhine – that I have been an advocate for a very long period of time, they currently have a disproportionate amount of representation on council. And then you've got a lot of those neighborhoods that have no representation, direct representation now, and never have. I mean, California has never produced a city council member, or Hartwell, or, you know, a number of other, South Fairmount. You know, and you have to ask the question, would city council be making the same decisions that they make in regard to land use and development in areas like Queensgate and South Fairmount and the whole MSD project? Would those projects look the same if those neighborhoods had representation? And when I say representation, I think that everybody on city council would say that's not fair.
Right. We do represent those neighborhoods.
Correct.
Right. Right.
What I mean is one council person that is specifically elected to advocate for that area.
And Jeff Birding is joining us now. Hi, Jeff. How are you this afternoon?
Thank you.
You know, you're part of the Task Force Elections Committee. And what about the past attempts that the city has made to change the way that council members have been elected? I mean, we've tried this a number of times before, haven't we?
Well, since 1998, when I helped found Build Cincinnati, and we advocated for a chief executive, mayor, and council members being elected from districts, We then followed that up in 2003, 2004, Mayor Lucan and council appointed the Cincinnati Electoral Reform Commission. It was chaired by a local attorney and civic leader, Don Mooney. I was the vice chair, participation from all the parties, and again, a recommendation to have the mayor be the chief executive of the city, the manager be the chief operating officer, and then council members elected in a hybrid system. Five members elected from districts, four at large. Neither of those council changes got to the ballot. We certainly from Build Cincinnati did change and make the mayor stronger, but retaining the chief executive manager. There have been numerous attempts at proportional representation, which have been defeated by the voters, I think at least three times. But there hasn't been a district plan on the ballot, that I'm aware of in maybe since the initial change was made back in the 20s to council manager system with all nine being elected at large. The polling that I've seen over the last 10 years, 15 years, has shown that the voters have a willingness to support electing council members elected from neighborhood districts because I think that they see a greater level of not only representation but accountability, that if members – are not advancing in some balanced way the interests of neighborhoods with the overall at-large city, they have an opportunity to defeat them. And as someone who was elected three times to Cincinnati City Council, the current 9X system is great for incumbents. It's not great for voters or challengers.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Michelle from Mount Washington, Jeff, you talked a little bit about this, and Mike, you'd mentioned this earlier, changes that were made in the level of authority that the mayor has. And I think you said the first changes were made in 1999. Is that right? She was wanting to know if you had some examples or two of the unintended consequences from those changes, because that was something that you'd start to talk about.
Well, the biggest one that we've been dealing with is the issue that's called the pocket veto.
Mm-hmm.
And the pocket veto is the ability of the mayor to effectively prevent any discussion on a legislative topic in advance. And you're not going to find it in the charter because it was not intended to be there when the charter was changed in 1999. But because those changes were made as a modification of the system rather than really looking at the whole system, and were made, and I think Jeff will can elaborate, you know, were made as a compromise, and compromise is a good thing. But what we wound up getting was a cobbled together system. And so that pocket veto is an unintended anomaly, and it gives the mayor an extraordinary power that nobody ever intended to give the mayor in 1999. Wasn't
because he can set the legislative agenda. He can determine whether something he likes or doesn't like is going to make it on the agenda, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And then has an actual veto after the fact. And in addition to that, has the ability to sign issues to committees and to determine who those committee chairs are. So
when we crafted the current system, and I was a part of that effort, the compromise was that the city manager would still be the chief executive officer and the city manager would still run the administration. And so the power that we intended to give the mayor was enhanced power resulting from a direct election from the voters, power at the expense of council. So we did intentionally give the mayor authority that previously had resided in the legislative body. But the notion that the mayor could literally control the agenda of council and when choosing neuter the council, who are all elected independently by the voters, was certainly not what we intended. Another unintended consequence is that while the mayor has extraordinary control over the legislative body, the mayor has extraordinary authority over the administrative branch, the executive branch of government as well. Only the mayor can initiate the hiring of the manager. Only the mayor can initiate the firing of the manager. So the manager, as long as he or she keeps the mayor happy, and the executive staff throughout the administration, as long as they're pleasing the mayor, people aren't going to lose their jobs. And so we have this system in Cincinnati, unique to any other system in the country, where the mayor is really exerting control over the legislative branch and the administration or executive branch. I want to clarify, I'm not talking about John Cranley personally, right, because I served with the predecessor to John, with John on council, and the use of these powers are very different among mayors. So I think John's doing a fine job, but the office of mayor and the powers that we grant the mayor should not be reliant on who's in the office. We should clarify it as a system, and that clarification should be done by the voters.
So has the review task force come up with any recommendations for how to deal with that?
Well, the pocket veto specifically, we have now recommended twice, needs to be corrected. And we actually tried to do that back in November, because the task force considered all you really need to do, the simplest way to get rid of the pocket veto and correct that unintended consequence, would be to redraft the language as it was intended to read. And that was that there to put a time period on when the mayor had to assign things to committee. So we consider that a clarification in November, and we tried to get that on the ballot, and we failed in the process. And at this point, it is one of the very definitive recommendations that the Balance of Power Committee has made, that pocket veto in one of several ways needs to be corrected.
Let's talk with Val in Mount Adams. Good afternoon, Val. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you. Well, first, to speak to the gentleman who talked about the Charter Party now having a lot of youth, younger people in it, I'm an old charter, right? Been around and a member of the Charter Party for a long time. And it brings up a question that I've heard you speak about today, and that is an idea that a city council person would advocate for his or her neighborhood. In fact, as a city council person, and I think Jeff would agree with this, you are not supposed to advocate for your neighborhood. You are supposed to advocate for the city. It is about the city, what's good for the city, not what's good for one neighborhood versus another neighborhood.
Okay, Jeff, let's let Jeff respond to that. Yeah, Jeff?
I think in an ideal world, that is correct. I think from my 6 years on council, I would just say, Val, that we had a split on council, and the split wasn't Republican versus Democrat and charter or conservative versus liberal. It was full-time council members who needed that $60,000 salary to pay their bills versus part-timers. And I would say respectfully, I think it was more common for part-time council members who didn't need the $60,000 to think in the broader interest of the city, because even if you were making people in particular neighborhoods where you got a lot of votes unhappy, it didn't matter so much. But if you're someone who needs to get elected and reelected in order to feed your family, you ideally say, of course, everyone's advancing the broader interest. But I would tell you, issues that would cost you votes that would aggravate your what is considered your base neighborhoods where you get the votes to get elected to city council, people avoided those issues and avoided making those neighborhoods unhappy because it could result in their defeat when they ran for election. And so I do think that the fact is that politicians in general like getting reelected, and they make votes that will aid their reelection. And whether or not they're advocating for the neighborhood that they live in or the neighborhood where they get most of their votes, there is that level of advocacy now. All we're suggesting is that the voters should have the ability, number one, to hold them accountable, more directly accountable, that a 9X makes very difficult, number one. And number two, the political power that resides in those few neighborhoods where there's great turnout and therefore great ability to elect or unelect someone, it should be more broadly distributed across the city to all neighborhoods.
So, Colin, how much more work does the task force have left to do? You've been going at this since May?
So it's coming up on a year. And I think that the task force is planning to have some final recommendations. I'll let Mike and Jeff speak to sort of their role. But I think then there's a whole nother series of work that begins around engaging citizens, engaging voters. You talked about the one of the considerations is around districts. However, those districts drawn, what would that look like? Establishing criteria, engaging citizens and voters. So, while I think a phase of that work is certainly coming to a close, I think there's a lot more work ahead around engagement, communications, and empowering citizens as part of the process.
We got about a minute left, and Mike, what's left for you at this point?
Well, there will be another round of recommendations that will occur in June. And as Colin alluded to, beyond that, there's going to be a continuing conversation about some of these bigger issues. We have a public forum in Mount Auburn on May 7th, and that is one of several public forums that are going to be held in the upcoming months to discuss these issues. So I ask that people come out and share their opinion and let us know what they think about Cincinnati moving forward.
Jeff, anything you'd like to add as we wrap this up?
The form of government we have matters. I think we all love our city. While we're seeing good progress, giving the voters more power, allowing voters to hold council members accountable, the mayor accountable, I think will only make our city better.
Mike, Jeff, and Colin, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Mike Morgan is co-chair of the Cincinnati Charter Review Task Force. Jeff Birding is a former Cincinnati councilman and chair of the Task Force Elections Committee. And Colin Groth is president of the Charter Committee of Greater Cincinnati. Coming up, what's the BBB up to these days? A lot more than you might realize. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.